this morning will be in chapter 23 of Job. Start with the first verse. Then Job answered and said, "Even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. I would order my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. Will he plead against me with his great power? No, but he would put strength in me. There the righteous might dispute with him, so should I be delivered forever from my judge. Behold, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand where he does work, but I cannot behold him. He hides himself on the right hand that I cannot see him. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. But he is one mind, and who can turn him? And what his soul desires, even that he does. For he performs the thing that is appointed for me, and many such things are with him. Therefore am I troubled at his presence. When I consider, I am afraid of him. For God makes my heart soft. The Almighty troubles me, because I was not cut off before darkness, neither has he covered the darkness from my face." That sounds like a nice poem if you want to read poems. But I'd rather understand how it deals with my life, wouldn't you? Job is who? You. What does Job's name mean? Hated and persecuted. Anyone in the image of God will be hated and persecuted upon this earth. It's the pattern from the very beginning. Who was the first righteous man that was persecuted? Two sons. Cain and Abel. Abel was the good son. He was persecuted. Right? From the very beginning, the persecution has come to the true sons. And like in Joseph's life, there was brothers and half-brothers. The full-blood brothers didn't persecute each other. It was the half-brothers that persecuted them, representing the religious folk persecuting the ones who are truly righteous. Okay? So we got to know, when we read this book and we study this book, this is about your life and my life. And you need to see the parallels in your life to these things that's going on in this life, and it'll help you understand how to deal with them, how you can assemble those things together in your mind to make your life flow as it should. So back to the first verse. Then Job, the hated and persecuted one, responded and said, "Even today is my talk bitter or rebellious?" The word rebellious is in this word. It's rebellious. He said, "My words are rebellious." Why do you think they were rebellious? Because he's in a test. Remember what in the book of Ruth, when Naomi said, "Don't call me Naomi any longer, call me bitter, because God has dealt bitterly with me." See? When we start complaining about what God does in our life, we end up getting bitter and not good. Bitterness is not good, not in our lives. He said, "My stroke is heavier than my groaning," and that's not literally what it says. It says, "My hand is heavier because of my groaning." That's what the language says. My hand is heavier because of my groaning. Now, we know this is symbolism, so what's he trying to tell us? My hand. What's my hand represent? So I can't do anything because of doing what? Of complaining and murmuring. When you complain and murmur, anything you do becomes much harder to perform because you're so self-centered on you. Me, 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 me. I, me, my, and mine. About the self-centeredness of humanity. When I complain about what everybody's doing, how everybody's treating me, my job gets harder. You hear what I'm saying? That's why God wants us to know this. So if I stop complaining, what happens to my job? It gets easier. See how easy that is to figure that out? When I don't complain, my job, it's not going to make the job any better. It's the way I think about the job. It's the way I perceive the job. If I think, people get up on Monday morning and say, "Oh God, it's Monday morning." And I mean, they have hell all day long. And you get the other person gets up and say, "Man, what a beautiful day. It's Monday morning." I don't want to go to work, but I got to, so see y'all later. They know they got to do it. They don't like any better than the next person, but they're happy. And you see them driving to work, whistling, singing to themselves, and you see other people snarling and growling. Now, which one do you think is really going to have a good day? It's a choice you make. Am I going to be bitter, or am I going to be better today? Well, I'm going to choose better. I've had enough of the bitter. And all of us have. We've all been there. But we should be the place where we're beginning to see that there's a difference. You know, we reap what we sow. If I sow to the flesh, I will reap corruption. If I sow to the spirit, I reap the life of the ages. See, which one do I want? Okay. He cries out in verse 3, "Oh, that I knew where I might find him." You know how many people's crying that out today? With the situations in the world? Oh, if I could only find God. Well, go look in a mirror. Go look in somebody else's eyes. Go find somebody that's portraying God in your life. Find somebody. They're out here. Look in somebody's eyes, because there's the mirrors. There's the mirror you can see. And when you look in a mirror in somebody else's eyes, you only see yourself. So if you got flaws, guess what you're seeing? You're not seeing them. You're seeing them in yourself. That's the problem. We want to judge people. But see, you can judge people. Jesus judged the world. He said, not guilty. So guess what? None of us are convicted felons. We've been acquitted. We're acquitted. We're free. There's no history behind us of what we did. The book says he kissed it in the sea of forgetfulness. Don't worry about it. It's gone. Don't think about it no more. See? Only your brothers and sisters in the church will bring it back to you. Don't worry, they'll bring it back. Oh, that I knew where I might find him. Where are you going to find God? I had a brother one time said, made a statement to my sister, and she don't like me very well. That's okay. And I understand that because of the religion where she's at, where she's, now she doesn't like me because I'm not Pentecostal. I've had a Pentecostal experience. We went right on by. Didn't want to camp there too long. And I think God moved me on through. But she's pretty bitter about things. She's a perfect Naomi, okay, that's been changed into the bitterness. And if you even mention my name in her presence, the veins in her neck pop out, and she gets angry, And my brother made a statement to her one time. He said, I've searched for God all over the world. He said, I've spent thousands of dollars to travel all over the world to try to find God in the mountains of the Far East and all that stuff, And he said, I found God in my little brother in West Portsmouth, Ohio. And she went off on that. He was telling me about it, and I said, but let me correct your statement. You did not find God in me. You found God in you, because that's where God is. See, you might have saw a reflection here of something, but you saw a reflection of what you got in you. And I get that flack, I don't need any more. Anyway, that's what you've got to do. You got to see it in yourself. When you get it in yourself, you'll see it in everybody else. Okay? And he says the rest of verse 3, oh, that I might come to his seat or his place. I want to go to where God is. Well, hello. It's in you. God dwells in his people. Know you not you're the tabernacle of the living God. And God's not a traveler. God doesn't leave his tabernacle and go somewhere else. Because he said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. See, he doesn't leave. We just think he's gone because we're not paying attention. See, we think he's gone. He said, oh, if he could come to his place, if he could get to where God is, this is what he'd do. You believe that? He said, I would order my cause before him, and I would fill my mouth with what? It says arguments in this King James translation, but it literally says defensive arguments. Do you really think you could defend yourself against God? I got to laugh because, that's hilarious, isn't it? To think I could defend myself, argue with God like a lawyer, get up and argue with my case, plead my case before God, and God would say, whoa, I guess I was wrong. You're right, Dave. He did. He said, I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. You don't think there's any pride involved in that one? I would understand everything. If I could come to God's place, I'd be just like him. I could do everything. I could argue and hold my own with him. You don't think that's what religion is today? The arrogance that's in people. It's unbelievable. Will he plead against me with his great power? He's coming to one good revelation here. No! There's that word. No! He knows that he will not plead against him, see? He knows that God is not after him to destroy him. Job feared God, and the thing that Job feared from God was the testings. He knew God loved him all the way through. He said, "Shall I receive good from the hand of God and not receive evil also?" He knew that God had to do some things in life. Didn't like it. Does anyone here say, "Boy, I can't wait till God fires me up again"? No. He's going to take care of what you need. You don't have to volunteer anything for that. He's going to do it. Let him do it. Surely he would put strength in me. He's not going to destroy me. He's not going to plead against me. But he's going to put power in me. He's going to put his strength in me. Do you think that's a negative statement? Job knew something. He said, "You know, God's not going to do anything to hurt me, but he's going to strengthen me." Job did have some understanding about God. It's just incomplete. And see, just like our lives, where we are right today, we're not completed yet, are we? We're in a processing. And the church world says, "Oh, you get saved and immediately you're a new creation. All things have become new." No, they're not. They're becoming new. They are becoming new. It's a process. God never changed anybody instantly. He processed them. The time. It takes time. "There the righteous might dispute with him, so should I be delivered forever." What? He said, "What am I going to do forever? I will be delivered how? From what? I will be delivered forever from my judge." No, 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 no. It says, "I'm going to be delivered from my judge," and that's like saying, "God's my judge, and I'm delivered from him, and I'll never go back before him again." What it is, the word, the preposition there, "from," is the wrong word. I'm going to be delivered by my judge. You see the difference? He's not going to separate him from us. He's going to be delivered by him. By the God residing in me is going to deliver me. You understand? It's not a separation. It's only separating the evil thinking out of my life that makes me holy and righteous and strong. Okay? Verse 8. "I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him." What do you think he means? See, just like most people, they want something tangible. God says you walk by faith, not by sight. And everybody's wanting something they can touch and feel and taste or see. And they can't take the truth of God and say, "God said it, I believe it," and that's the end of discussion. If he said it, I believe it. Do I understand all of it? No, but I still believe what he said. I don't believe a translation of what he said. I believe what he said. And there's a pattern we got to figure out. The book, not just Job, but the whole book, the whole Bible, is a book of patterns and principles. And we have to learn to see the pattern and the principle. If God's pattern is something in Genesis, it's the same in Revelation. It's the same pattern. The same pattern all the way through. Okay? If a tree is a tree, it's a tree, isn't it? Wherever it is, it's a tree. Right? Just like Abraham. How did he become righteous? He believed what God said. He didn't say he believed in the King James Bible, did he? He said he believed what God said. And see, we have to distinguish between God and the King James Version of the Bible, or any other version of it. What did God say to you? And see, God talks today. Of course, a lot of people don't believe that. How many people hear something in your head every day? How many people hear voices in their head every day? And if anyone says they don't, they're lying. So I'll just get that out of the way right now. We all hear voices in our head every day. Every day. And we're not crazy for it. I know I had some times past where they were trying to evaluate me and they couldn't figure me out. And they said, do you hear voices? I said, absolutely. You think someone's after you? Absolutely. See? But I was answering honestly and they couldn't understand what I'm saying. I said, yeah, I think somebody's out to get me. Trying to kill me. Oh, he's got problems. Well, you got more problems than I got. And I ended up with the psychiatrist. He said, I have need of you ministering to me. Seriously. He's dead now. But he said, you know, I shouldn't be talking to you. You should be talking to me. And he was a psychiatrist. I was the one supposed to have problems. Okay? And that's the way it should work. God's people should be ministering to the psychiatrist because they're the ones that's got the problems. Most of them are pretty weird. Most of them I ever met. He said, I go forward, backward, but I cannot perceive him. Does anywhere say, now I'm not saying you don't feel anything when you think about God or have an experience with God, but is there any place in the Bible where you say you feel God, you have to feel God? He just is. I don't have to feel God tap me on the back and say, I'm right here. I don't have to hear him say anything. I know he's there. How do I know he's there? He said, I would never leave you nor forsake you. Then where is he? He's here. He's with me. He's in me. I don't have to worry about it because he said it. See? I'm breathing because he's here. If he wasn't in me, I would not be breathing. His breath is my breath. Okay? Simple as that. So when I quit breathing, I know he's not here. I'll be with him. He won't be with me. Right. Okay, look at verse 9. This is a great verse. Watch what it says. Watch what it says. On the left hand where he, God, does work. Oh, did you hear it? Didn't say he worked on the right hand. He works on the left hand. The left hand is the correcting hand. The right hand is the loving side, the righteous side. So God works on us with his left hand. And if you haven't felt his left hand, then I'm considering wondering if you're alive. Because God's going to work on you with his left hand. And left speaks of the negative, see? The negative thing. And I know nobody can say, I've had a perfect life, I've never had a problem. If anybody says that, I know we've got to work about that lying devil in them. We've got some work ahead of us. There's got to be one in there, okay? Don't worry about it. He'll take care of it. He said, I know on the left, I can't find him on the left hand where he works. He said, but I cannot see or perceive him. He shrouds himself on the right hand that I cannot see him. Well, see, what happened to Moses? Did Moses get a look at him? He just seen him pass by, looked at his backside. That's all he saw. And Moses glowed for months afterwards. That people could had to put a veil over his face just because he got. Do you think we could really look at God in a position or the condition that we walk in today and survive our flesh? I don't think it could handle it. We have to pass through the veil here of this flesh. We have to pass through it before we can truly see God as he is. He showed you that Moses couldn't handle it. It would have killed him if he'd have saw, looked up on his face. And if we look at the true identity of what's going on with God right now, we wouldn't survive it. I truly believe we would not physically survive seeing the fullness of God in the condition we're in right now. But when we pass through this veil and get into that Holy of Holies, truly, in the spiritual Holy of Holies, not some building or someplace, when we're back home, when you look at him, it's going to be so awesome that there'll be no way of articulating what you saw to another human being. It's impossible because you won't be human there anyway. Okay? But then look what he says. And I love this because this is a man who has had experience with God. He's been up and down and had all these kicks in the teeth and slanders and all his friends trashing him out. And he says here, this is his answer. And this should be your answer to everyone that ever cuts you down. Any human being that ever cuts you down, any ministry, anybody that says anything to you about you not being qualified or you not being where you should be, this is the answer to you to give to anyone that gives you a hard time about where you're at. Look what he says. But he, and who is he? God knows the course of life, that's what it should say, that I take, and he has tried me. The word when is added. He has tried me. He put me on this course. He has tried me, and I shall come forth as gold. Here's a man that knows the future. He's got a glimpse of the end, see? What's our finish? What's our finality? To be gold. Gold is the nature of God. So when everything else is dusted off of me, all the dust is shaken away, only thing left is God. That's the end of it. That's the finality of it. Actually, it's the beginning of it. But it's the beginning. The finality is the beginning. The finality of the dust is the beginning of life eternal. He said, my feet have possessed his steps. His course of life have I kept and not turned aside. He's telling you where he's been. He said, I've done what God wanted me. That's the best testimony you could ever say. My feet have possessed his steps, and I have kept his course of life, and I have not turned aside. All you could say is, I obeyed my father. Isn't that what he just said? He obeyed his father. There ain't a better testimony you could give. I obeyed my father. I might have torqued a whole bunch of people off in the process, but I obeyed my daddy. He told me what to do, and I did it. You got a complaint with that? You better talk to my papa. I'm not arguing with you. You take it to him. Okay? Neither have I departed from the commandments of his lips. That would be his word, wouldn't it? I have esteemed, and the word esteemed is not a real good word for this. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my prescribed portion. This is necessary food, but the language literally says, I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my prescribed portion. Whatever somebody wanted to give me is nothing compared to what his words says. You got to love the Word of God. And I asked God one time years ago, how can I make sure I won't be deceived? Because it says in Matthew 24, I believe, it says, if possible, even the very elect would be deceived. And I said, now wait a minute. My brain started functioning. And I said, if even the very elect could be deceived, then there wouldn't be no purpose in this thing. But that I went and checked, and that little word if is there. So it's a conditional word. If is conditional. If it were possible. That tells me it is not possible for the elect to be deceived. And I said right then, I made up my mind, I got to know right now. And I said, Father, I got to know now. How do I know for sure that I'm not one of those deceived? I need to know now if I am part of that elect. And you know what he told me? Three words. Know my word. If you know my word, you won't have any doubts. Doubt has no place in sons of God. I believe what my father says, so why should I doubt it? He's took care of me for 57 years. Why should I doubt now? See what I mean? Why should I doubt at this point in my life? I mean, to me, it gets more ridiculous every day to doubt what God says. I never let my mind wander off and say, oh, what might happen? Oh, my mind tries to go there, and just like Lloyd said, beat it, you know. Take a hike. Get out of here. Listen to that foolishness. I hear the same things everyone else hears. I hear all those doubts and fears, trying, phobias trying to minister to me. And I just say, it ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. Because I've heard his voice. I've heard his voice. And the voice of another, I will not follow. And you know why? Because he said so. He said, if my sheep hear my voice, they will not follow the voice of another. I've learned it. And that's all you have to do is learn Father's voice. It's just like anybody else. If Keith calls me on the phone today, you know, I know who he is. He don't have to tell me who he is. And anybody in here, I guarantee anyone in this room right here calls me, I'll know your voice. Maybe in that we haven't talked on the phone very much, but everybody else, I've talked to them, and it's become a voice I understand. I hear it, and I hear the tone. I don't have to have you say, hey, this is Lloyd. I know who Lloyd is. If I talk to Fran, I don't have to say, is this Fran?
You hear the Irish accent.
Yeah, uh-huh. That northern Canadian Irish accent. But see, I mean, you learn the voice. Now, how do you learn somebody's voice? How do you learn a voice?
Relationship.
By familiarizing yourself with them, being around them. See, you want to know God's voice? Hang out with him. Take him with you when you go, wherever you go. You hear what I'm saying? I know he's in you, but don't hide him. Don't cover him. Keep him in the forefront of your thinking. Stay with him. Listen to him. Because you could be doing the very most carnal thing you could think of. Lord, he speaks to me most of the time on the bathroom, on the throne. You know, that's okay. It doesn't make any difference. But take him with you in your thought. So whenever he wants to talk to you, he's there. And you'll get to be familiarized with his voice. And when you hear them other crazy voices in your head telling you to do some ridiculous thing, you say, oh, get out of here. Get out of here. That's not my Father talking to me. That's me talking to me. And I'm not listening. And you're free. Once you learn his voice, it's that simple. Spend time with him. Hang out with him. And you get that relationship. You know him. There's no more problems. Because everything that comes up, you say, mm-mm. Trouble comes knocking at the door, say, mm-mm, that's not mine, that's his. His burden, my burdens are his. My big brother will take care of it. My father will take care of it. I don't have to worry about it. And you're free. I know it sounds simple, but it is. It is. It's very simple. We as human beings love to complicate things, don't we? If it's complicated, it's got to be much better, right? Now, what about some of the old simple things of life? Yeah. Just enjoying a beautiful day. Why do we have to have all the electronics and all this foolishness of life that the world has given us? Why can't we just go sit down by a pond somewhere and just look at the water? Watch the water ripple or throw a pebble in once in a while and just sit and talk. Why can't we do that? I can. Yeah. I've got a bass boat and sometimes I get out in the water and I just don't do anything. I just let it float around wherever it wants to float. People say, you catch any fish? I said, nah, but I'm having a great time. Sometimes I just put it on the water and float. I don't start the motor. I don't use the little trolling motor. I just get it out in the lake and just let it do whatever. I don't even anchor it. Just let it, whatever. I'm not in any hurry. Sometimes I just lay down in the bottom of the boat and people come up the side of the boat and they look in the boat. They say, oh, look, there's a boat afloat. And they get up close and they look in. I'm laying there looking them right in the eye. Eye. Kind of flips them out a little bit, but, you know, I don't care. They think they're going to get something free if they can get a hold of it, you know. Hello. I just like to not be pressured anymore. I make a joke that, and it's a joke thing, that I don't wear a watch anymore. I don't need someone to tell me when I'm sleepy. My eyes get real heavy. I don't need someone to tell me when they wake up because my eyes fly open. And I don't need no one to tell me when I'm hungry because then my belly tells me. So I don't need to watch, see. But in essence, when I come to that thought, that helped my thinking process lighten up to where I can just enjoy what life is. It's a joke thing, but yet it's helping me understand that I need to relax. When you relax, there's not a strain. When your muscles are tight, what happens to them? Your whole body gets under pressure. When you relax all those muscles, you feel so much better. You don't wake up with aches and pains when you crawl out of bed in the morning. So you have all that tension. I don't have that tension. I could, but you know what I found out? It's too heavy to carry. I don't like carrying it. And my Father can carry all those burdens. I don't have to worry about it. It's a wonderful thing. And I mean, you don't get it overnight, but you got to start somewhere. And today is the greatest day in the world to start because it's the only day you got. Yesterday's gone. And tomorrow will never get here, will it? It's only today. Because tomorrow, at midnight tonight, it'll still be today, won't it? Okay? Verse 11. We did that, didn't we? 12? 13. But he is one. And see that word mind? He is in one mind? No. Those words aren't there. It literally says, he is one. He is one. What is God? One. There's one God. Okay? He is one. And who can turn him? And his what? What's that word right there? And what his what desires? What's that word? It's not there. It literally should say this. And his mind, and what his mind desires, he does. What his mind desires, he does. It's his thoughts that will prevail, isn't it? His plans and purposes and his thoughts. So we got to realize it's not about a soul. God is spirit, is he not? How can you worship him? In spirit. Well, what's a soul then? Soul's mixture. He's not after mixture. Mixture does not enter the kingdom. It's about spirit, isn't it? This is about the mind. When I get my mind right with God, guess where I am? I'm in spirit. I can't communicate with God through my soul. I can't communicate through him with my emotions. I can only communicate with God in spirit, because that's what God is. Didn't Paul write and say, the natural man receives nothing from the Spirit of God, neither can he, literally it's impossible, because it's spiritually discerned. See, I can't communicate with God except spiritually. I can't talk audibly, even though I say audibly, I can't talk to him with a carnal understanding, because I'm not communicating with him. I'm talking to my soul. If I want to talk to God, I got to talk to him in spirit. That's just that simple. I don't see that as complicated. If he's a spirit, you got to communicate in spirit. God dwells in the spirit. I got to do it in spirit. Not emotions. That's the soul. God's not interested in that. Okay? Verse 14. Because he completes that which is appointed for me. See? It doesn't perform something. The word literally means complete. He completes what's appointed to me. Whatever God has appointed, didn't he set things up before the foundation of the world? Didn't the book say that? That everything was done before the foundation of the world? We were chosen in him before the foundation? Okay, if it was already set up, then all God's going to do is complete what his plan was for you. And the world, the church world, is so messed up because they keep trying to tell you you can convince God to do what you want. Well, then he wouldn't be God, would he? If God did what you wanted and what I wanted and what everybody else wanted, it would be mass confusion, mass hysteria. Because somebody over here is praying, kill Keith, and Keith's saying, kill them. Yeah. Well, which one wins? It's like the sports figures you see on TV. They all get out there and pray before the game. This team over here, that team, Lord, help us knock their brains out and beat them. Well, which God's going to help them? See? He's a God of all of them, so what, you think he really cares if you get there and beat your brains out with each other? It's ridiculous. But see, that's what religion has taught people. That's not our God, is it? It's not our God. Verse 15. Did I finish that? No, he didn't say. And many such things, and many such are with him. Things isn't there. Verse 15. Therefore, justly am I troubled in his presence. Therefore, justly am I troubled in his presence. Now, why did Job say that? God's going to do what he wants, and he didn't ask Job what he should be doing. He said, so I'm troubled in his presence because I don't know what he's going to do. I do. Do you know what God's going to do? Whatever he wants. Now, that might be a generic answer to you, but that's what he's going to do, isn't it? He's going to do exactly what he wants to do. So all I can say to him is, amen. That's just what I want. Whatever you think I need, I agree with you. That's what I want. It's okay. You can't be wrong if you agree with God. Only to the church people can you be wrong. And that don't matter. He said, therefore justly I am troubled not at but in his presence when I consider I am what? What's it say? God did not give you a spirit of fear. So it has to be something wrong with that, doesn't there? The word should be awe, A-W-E. I am in awe of him. When I consider, I am in awe of him. Now, does that make any sense? When I'm in his presence, I'm troubled. I know what it is. And when I consider what's going on here, I'm in awe of him. How did he take this worthless piece of dirt, squished into a bag and called a body, and make something wonderful from it? I don't know. I'm in awe of him about it. How he does everything he does, I'm in awe of him about it. But I know he did it. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Verse 16. Because, not God, but because the Almighty makes my heart soft, and the Almighty, again, troubles me. Not troubles, but he alarms me. Now, when we hear the word alarm, what do we think? When you hear the word alarm, somebody tell me what you think. He alarms me. Tell me what that means. Huh? It's a warning. See, it's not frightening like most people would say, but he alarms me. He warns me. He gives me warnings. Now, when you're doing something in your life, I know everybody thinks you got to ask somebody permission to do something. That ain't true. If you get ready to do something, does God ever give you a flag to do it or not to do it? You get ready to do something and you know it's wrong, how long does it take you to figure it out? Because you know why? God was alarming you. God was alarming you. Instantly you know, don't you, Mike? Instantly you know it, because God's right there to say, don't do that. That'll get you hurt. That'll get you hurt. You don't want to do that. Verse 17. But I was not destroyed in the presence of the darkness. I was not destroyed in the presence of the darkness, he said. That's what it should say. I was not destroyed in the presence of the darkness. Neither has he concealed the darkness from my mind. Genesis 1. Genesis 1 tells us so much. And I got to put that tag on here. I got to. Genesis 1. You want to turn there with me? I'll walk you through it. Just take a moment. A few moments. First three verses. I got to do it. I got to tag this right on here. It's Job, I know. And I usually don't go running off somewhere, but this one has to go here. Genesis 1, verse 1 through 3. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. It literally don't say that. It says in the first fruit, Reshith, first fruit. It's 34 times in the New Testament used as first fruit. In the Old Testament, rather, in Genesis, in the Hebrew. In the first fruit, Elohim, the plurality of God, created heaven and earth. Not heaven and earth, but the perfect God-man. Okay? Combination of spirit and earth. And how was Adam formed? Out of the dust, the earth, and then put the heavenly, the spirit in him. Perfect God-man. Okay? And the earth was without form. Literally, it should say it was waste. And it was empty and desolate. See, before Adam had the spirit of God placed in him, what was he? Waste and desolate. Waste and desolate. The spirit wasn't, the heavens wasn't waste and desolate, but the earth was waste and desolate, the human form. And darkness was upon the face of the deep. The word darkness here, if you look up the word, it says ignorance. It's specifically ignorance. Darkness is ignorance, lack of understanding. Okay? And it was upon the face. What is this here? Look at me. What is this? The face. It represents your mind. So ignorance was upon the, not the face, but the mind of what? The deep. Well, if you look up this word deep, guess what it says? Humanity. Ignorance was on the face or the mind of humanity. What is that? We were born in ignorance. We didn't know what was going on. And look what he says. And the Spirit of God did what? It says moved in the King James, but the Hebrew language says brooded. And when a mama hen is brooding over chicks, what's she doing? She's protecting them. So he's saying, telling you here in symbolism, in parabolic language, that the Spirit of God protects the mind, the face of the waters, or humanity. He protects the mind of humanity while they're in ignorance. As long as we're in darkness, God's protecting us. He's not holding us accountable for anything when we're in ignorance. Thank God for that, huh? Thank God for that. And look at the next verse. And God said, let there be... Well, guess what? There was no sun, moon, and stars. Not yet. They're not created yet. Look down farther. So it was the light of Christ. It was the understanding of God. And didn't Jesus say, I am the light that came down from above? And that was not Jesus the man, but the Christ speaking out of him. That's the understanding. And so we became light. we became light, just as he is light. Had to put that on there. That was just a perfect fit for it. He covered them. He protected them while they were in darkness. Just a perfect parallel. So what are we learning from Job? What are we learning from Job? I'll ask a question. What are we learning from Job? Just this lesson today. Keep your mouth shut and go on.